This is Seattle Sports Station.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
He's Ryan Roland Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers. Hour number two. We are joined on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline with our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. This conversation with Shannon is powered by Pacific Lamp and Supply. Shannon, good late morning to you. How was last night at the park? I mean, the bats, once again, not showing up.
No, it's one of those things where we get into this week and there's a little far too much of, I feel like I've seen this game before, unfortunately. And you know, really disappointing coming off of what was a very good road trip. So definitely a little subdued.
Shannon, I got to ask you, we've been talking about this lineup shuffle a ton, how much they've moved this thing around. Do you ever feel like, or having conversations with guys in the clubhouse, that when you have that kind of instability, when you're a JP Crawford and you are putting up good numbers, or you know, Adam Frazier, who's trying to find his groove, have they talked about any kind of like feel like where they really want to have that cemented spot in the lineup? Or are these guys happy to say, hey, you know what, I'm happy to hit seventh, I'm happy to hit in the leadoff spot?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think they care where they hit in the lineup. I think the biggest thing for them is exactly what you said. They want to be in there every day. And I think that they know, you know, with the Mariners, they have done a lot of changes with the lineup. But I think the one yesterday was probably a little bit of a long time coming. And I think it's going to be one that they're going to take a longer look at. I actually asked Scott about that after the media session. And then he said, yeah, it's definitely, you know, time to get JP back up there. And one of the things that's been tough over this little kind of shorter stretch the last 4 or 5 days is they've had key pieces out on top of the pieces that are out for a long time because of the J.P. Crawford illness, missed a couple of games, the scheduled day off for Ty France, which turned into he actually needed it because he was a little bit beat up. Julio Rodriguez playing 55 games in a row definitely needed a game off. So the lineup has been even a little bit more unstable because they decided that they needed to do that, especially ahead of what's coming up this weekend, which I don't think was a bad idea. Now let's hope that that pays off, that they got those players that time.
Shannon, how do the Mariners slow down Mike Trout? Because it just seems like it's an impossible task. Last night they got Trouted. He was responsible for all of their offense, 4 runs driven in on 2 home runs. How do you slow down the unstoppable force that is Trout? Is it just simply don't pitch to him, put him on base every time? It seems like this is every single time the Mariners play the Angels.
Well, you know, he's been doing this for a little while, Curtis, and there's some other teams I hear that have had these problems with him too. So,
okay.
I think your only chance is to let him beat himself, and I don't think there's even a way to give him too much assistance. I did love what we saw in the first inning of the game. You know, George Kirby goes out and see a 97-98-mile fastball in the first battery faces. Fantastic. Trout comes up. He walks him. He hates walking people, but this was a brilliant walk. Everything was up, up, up. You know, no matter, going to go ahead and put you on base. And you know, I thought, okay, perfect approach. I think he did the right thing. If he wants to swing at one of those, and if he gets one of those, well, good for him. But, you know, unfortunately, on the home run that Kirby gave up, it just completely missed on the location. So you have to be sharp, and you hear Scott Service say this all the time, and it's true. You got to make sure nobody's on in front of him so that you limit the damage when it happens.
Hey, you're talking about George Kirby, and obviously I love when that velo is just a tick up because you know everything else he's bringing to the table. I want you to go back to last year. Now, Logan Gilbert, it's so hard not to compare these two, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, just because of, you know, it's just easy to put them side by side. But I'm looking at Logan Gilbert's first 9 starts. Now, Shannon, I don't expect you to pull up every start. I think George Kirby's had a better start to his career. Do you feel like, and again, that's because Logan got out of the gates really well. There's a couple of rainouts. I remember he got taken out of a couple of games, and you're looking at some of these inning logs and stuff like that. But when you look at George Kirby, is this a guy that you're looking at and saying, okay, you've got Logan Gilbert, everything he's doing this year, is this what we're going to see from George Kirby when you're talking about year number 2 in the big leagues, year number 3, et cetera? I mean, how do you look at these two guys and put them next to each other?
You know, it's funny because I did the same thing probably starting 5-6 games into Kirby's career, because there were some people that were kind of grousing, oh, he gave up three runs. Like, okay, he's a rookie playing good teams out there. That's, you know, take that, please. And look at what Logan Gilbert did last year and look at where he is right now. And then I thought I better go look at what Logan Gilbert did last year. And Logan did start hot and then really kind of a little bit of a slide, not huge, but it was, you could see that, you know, he was getting hit a little bit more. He was putting up the runs, but I'm not getting too trapped with that right now because it changes from game to game when you match them up. George Kirby, after five games, well ahead of where Logan Gilbert was. After seven games, they were about, by those numbers, exactly where the other was. So I think there's some up and down in that, but very, very different when you look at what their strengths are at this point of their career and the position that they were in. George Kirby is more polished than Logan Gilbert was. And Logan Gilbert had one elite pitch. So he probably had the best elite tool in that fastball when he first came up, although George Kirby's command is probably very close to that. It's not a pitch, but it is a tool. And Logan didn't have much else. I mean, he was pretty much living on that fastball the entire time he was up last year. He got to the bigs and found out immediately the curveball that put up, you know, great numbers for him in the minors was not going to play in the big leagues. The slider was okay, but it was at a spot where he actually started working on it in season, which you don't usually see. You don't want to be trying to change pitches in season. And he actually did that. So all the good that Logan did last year, a lot of that comes down to that elite fastball and his presence and everything that he puts into a start. And then he took all of that into the offseason, reworked most of his pitches, and you see what you see right now. Kirby's pitches, the fastball, you know, quality a tick below what Gilbert had, but everything else, I think, is more finished than what Logan was at this point. Logan's there now, no question about it. But as a rookie last year, he didn't have the pitches that George Kirby has. And with Kirby now, the adjustment is, how do I use this stuff against these hitters that I am facing? And also learning that some of the strikes that he was throwing in the minor leagues, they're still strikes in the big leagues, but big league hitters hit them. So he is having to, you know, be better with his location, also learning that he needs to stay ahead in the count. And that's what we saw last night. That was kind of his superpower in the game and something that he's really been working for and has been a focus. He wants to stay ahead in those counts. He wants those first pitch strikes. Was at 80% last night, which was phenomenal. And, you know, had it not been just a mistake pitch to Mike Trout and just giving up the single before him, which was on a 2-0 count, which I believe was the only 2-0 count he had to that point in the game, other than the walk to Trout, you know, you would have been looking at a very different story. And that's something, you know, that's a bit of a learning for him right there. But the bottom line is they are both, I think Logan now is among the elite. George Kirby is well on his way. And I asked Mike Blowers on the postgame show, what does this thing look like a year from now? And, you know, it's going to look like it's going to be a very tough day. When you're going into opposing ballparks, players are looking at, oh, we've got Kirby and Logan back-to-back. It's going to be a tough couple of days right there. And, you know, we're not too far from that. And go ahead and throw in Emerson Hancock is putting up nice numbers coming back from his injury. So you start to see those things, you know, really bode well for the not-too-distant future.
Shannon, we talked earlier in the show about how the Mariners can go about fixing this lineup and whether or not that solution comes from within the organization, maybe promote somebody from the minor leagues or adjust the lineup around, or maybe from with outside the organization looking at some trade candidates. When you view the situation right now, what do you think is more likely, the Mariners go inside the organization to find that help or look outside?
Well, I don't think that help is inside the organization right now. You're hoping that at some point Jared Kelnick is to a point where you can call him back up, but that's not fair to rely on him for that at that point. You are going to see Justin Upton at some point, but that is, you don't know what you're going to see there. You don't know when you're getting Kyle Lewis back. You don't know when you're getting Mitch Haniger back. You know, certainly in the case of Haniger, that's way out. In the case of Kyle Lewis, it's a concern. It's a concussion. You don't know with these things. They are different for everybody. They can linger. So I don't see that help from within. I mean, maybe you get lucky with Justin Upton, maybe. But if you're talking offense, I don't see that help within. If you're talking bullpen, Matt Brash is doing good things right now. I think he will be up at some point and will be of impact you're fine with the starting rotation. But I, you know, if you want to add to the offense, the only within you have are the guys that are out there right now.
I got to ask you, Shannon. Yesterday, Jesse Winker, they locked him up for the next 2 years. What prompted that? Like, is there any, you know, extra information or something that we're sort of missing here? I know it's just a situation where, hey, they're just taking away his arbitration year for next year in 2023. But is there something that said, oh, okay, this is the time right now to talk about Jesse Winker as a not so much a long-term solution here, but someone who we want in this organization for longer than 2022?
Well, I think it was a philosophy, kind of an organizational philosophy with their younger players. And Jesse Winker is a younger player who is still under club control for the next 2 years. So I had heard that, you know, there was a possibility that they were trying to not extend some of their ARB players, but at least, you know, buy out those ARB years. And that's what they did. And that could turn into a deal for the Mariners, or, you know, it could be something that doesn't work out too well. But there's a reason they traded for Jesse Winker. They love the numbers. They love everything they saw that he did in Cincinnati. And they thought that there was actually more in there. They thought he can probably hit lefties. We can do more with him. So I think that is just, it's a commitment to what they had seen from him and what caused them to go out and get him. It's, you know, he's already in for this year. And I think at that point, it is something that they were working on in spring training and something that's carried on, and they further committed to it.
Shannon, one last one from me. Saturday is a doubleheader, a scheduled doubleheader for the Mariners and Angels. You're going to be doing two pregames and two postgames. Are you working on any breathing exercises? Are you going to have water on hand so the palate stays moist? How are you going to be able to handle that double duty?
Well, we've talked about this. I mean, the broadcasters are doing it as well. And Gary Hill says the key to this whole thing is snacks, which, you know, generally is a good thing. No question about it. You definitely want to stay hydrated just because you want to stay hydrated in general. And, you know, try and get some sleep. My, you know, kind of the fatalist in me is saying, you know, they're going to play extra innings tonight. You just know that's going to happen. But, you know, just be ready. And it's funny. I want to get it over because it's just been in the focus for about the last week. How are we going to do this? Who are we going to have on the show? How are we going to, you know, physically get through this? What are we going to bring for this? So it's all eyes have been on this thing that's coming up. I hope it's something that the fans enjoy, and I hope it's something that the Mariners come away from with a couple of wins. But I think we will be okay.
Well, Shannon, best of luck tomorrow. Best of luck tonight. Also, work in the game. She is our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. You can follow her on Twitter, at Shannon Dreher. Read all of her work at seattlesports.com. Shannon, really appreciate you joining us today.
All right. No problem, guys.
That is Shannon Dreher. This hour is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Now, normally in this segment, we do four down territory, four football questions. But since we have got Mariners analyst Ryan Rollinsmith in with us for the entirety of the show today, let's do some four wide.
Let's do it.
All right, Ryan, ball one. Despite taking the loss last night, what was the most impressive thing you saw from George Kirby against the Angels?
Just straight fastballs, attack mode, up in the strike zone. You heard Shannon talk about the fastball velo was up. It was up a mile per hour. I just love the fact, when you're watching this kid, I take the debut out. Right, the debut, you kind of running on adrenaline, you got nothing to lose, he's pitching inside, then he went to the Mets and he's got a little gun shy. You could see him pitching around contact. Well, that has not been the case lately. He has just been going after guys, and if you notice a reaction, now Mike Trout hits a home run, you notice a reaction, he's not watching that thing. When you're a young player, man, you watch that ball leave, you're like, oh, Mike Trout just hit a home run. You kind of have this like deer in headlights look. Now he was mad, dude. Like, he turned around, he shook his head like he's like, oh, you know, like he should have, if he would have made this pitch, it would have been punch out city. So that's what I like about him, just how much he is on the attack, up in the strike zone with that fastball.
Yeah, George Kirby, very impressive for a young pitcher. I love when he was asked, I think it was after either his first start or second start, just about his command. He's like, yeah, I hate walking players.
I love it.
I hate it.
So good.
Like, that's what you want to hear from young players in the game. Let's get to ball two. All right, Ryan, before the season started, I remember you were on the air either – it was a pre or post game with me, or you said it a few times. You had Justin Verlander as your Cy Young favorite.
Yes.
Coming off of 2 years of basically inactivity at age 39, And lo and behold, he is at the top of every Cy Young leaderboard. I want you to put into perspective the kind of season he's having at age 39, nearly 2 years removed from last pitching.
Well, the 2 years removed is what heightens this guy to his competitiveness. He is a competitive dude. I met him back in 2011. I remember playing golf in a, you know, the six of us playing golf in a group. This guy, man, this is over in Florida spring training. I was like, okay, all right. Like, he was kind of on the level of, you know, a little bit douchey, you know what I mean? Like, because he wasn't going to lose. And ever since then, all of a sudden, when he started to have a little decline in stuff-wise, he went out and found it. He found what he had to do to be back to Justin Verlander. Max Scherzer talked about it. Max Scherzer won a Cy Young. A week later, he's watching video on his changeup to try and get his changeup. That's what the best in the game do. That's what they do. So when the fact he's sitting out for 2 years watching all these buddies just absolutely dominate, do good things, he's watching Gerrit Cole, who is on the same level stuff-wise, he's sitting there going, no, I'm just rubbing my hands, ready to roll, because as soon as I'm healthy, I don't care if I'm 50 years old, I'm just going to go out and dominate, and I've got everything to prove, because people have doubted. People started doubting, oh, he's on the decline, he's not going to be the same. No. He's like, all right, let's do this.
Well, God, and then you look at what the Astros did last year, making it to the World Series without him. I would feel like if I were Justin Verlander, I'd want to prove to people that, like, yeah, they still need me.
100%.
Like, even though they made the World Series.
And sitting there watching, just, it drives you nuts. If you're with the team, especially, like, oh man, just like Mitch Haniger, I guarantee he's going through that right now. The other thing, just real quick on this too, when you're at that level, you're obsessed, right? You are absolutely obsessed. And I wish I knew what that felt like. No, but I'm joking. But he was sitting there. He dived into the pitch analytics, he wasn't having this, you know, ego thing where it's like, oh, I'm Justin Verlander, I'm just going to do it this way. No. He found ways. He was obsessed with being even better than what he was. So not surprised at all.
Let's get to ball three. Coming up at noon, we're going to have a conversation about the biggest game changers today in sports. We're going to look at some of the people that have just impacted their sport in ways that go beyond the box score. Obviously, with Steph Curry coming off of his fourth championship last night. Ryan, I want to know from you, what was the most jaw-dropping thing you have ever seen on a baseball field?
Are you talking about, like, the craziest or the most impressive thing?
Most impressive.
All right, people might not understand this. It is very hard on cue to hit a home, like, to basically say, I'm going to hit a home run and do it. It's really hard. Now, back in 2008, I think, my second start. I went, like, five innings. I was on a pitch count. Threw well. We go extra innings. We've got Jamie Burke, backup catcher, on the mound.
That's right.
Right? Now, he was taking it seriously. He was pumping 86, 88. It's like the 14th inning. It was a travel day for both the Tigers and us. Miguel Cabrera comes up. Jeff Clements behind the plate. Now, Burkey, I love the guy. He was like, hey, listen, we're going to throw this pitch, that pitch, whatever. And this might not seem like the biggest thing, but this is something that blew me away. I saw him talking to Jeff Clement, right? And he looked down. He just kind of, like, you know, gestured to him, like, hey, I've got this kind of thing. I was like, oh, what did he just say? Next pitch, whack, home run. We get on the plane that afternoon. Now, it was a long day. Get on the plane, and Burkey's mad. Like, Jamie Burke, he's just upset that he gave it up. And Jeff Clements, like, dude, I got to tell you a story, man. And I said, is it what Miguel Cabrera said? Yeah. He goes, yeah. He goes, I'll tell you later. I can't tell you now, because he didn't want to, offend Burkey. So we're on the plane. Jamie Burke walks by. He goes, hey, where was that pitch? Was it down? He goes, oh, it's kind of middle. He walks up. He goes, hey, listen to this. Miguel Cabrera walks up to me and says, hey, we're going home right now, puppy. Next two pitches. I'm hitting left field. Watch this.
Wow.
Whack. It just crushes ball. So we all saw him in the dugout. We saw him talking to Jeff Clement. We're like, what's he talking about? He just said, yeah, I'm just going to knock this thing out. We're done. Game's over. And again, it's not the craziest thing, but to me, it was just like, man, this guy is on another level, dude. Insane.
Well, I mean, that's why he's going to the Hall of Fame one day. There was another story, I forget who it was, about Miguel Cabrera's ability to hit a home run on cue, where he had, the at-bat prior, he told some rookie on the team, like, hey, go take a look at my footage, see what I was doing wrong in my last at-bat. And the rookie was like, yeah, you had, your weight was off balance. He's like, yeah, I know. And so next at bat, he's like, watch me hit a home run. Sure enough, first pitch out. Like,
insane.
That is stupid levels insane of ability.
Oh, man.
Let's get to ball four. Now, this question is inspired by something that's coming up on the timeline. What's the best trash talk you ever received from a fan during your playing days?
All right. So I had all kinds of reasons for people to trash talk me. Number one, I had a hyphenated name. right? So everyone ripped me for having the hyphenated name. I wore glasses, wore the Rex specs.
So, as a fellow glasses wearer, yeah. I've gotten my fair share of criticism
right.
too.
And so it's just an easy target. The third one, you know, being Australian. So they go on that Wikipedia page, like, oh, he's from Australia. So sure enough, Chicago, if you're pitching against the White Sox in that visiting bullpen, where you warm up, the pitcher's rubber is right here. Well, down below, right at your feet, there's like this chain link fence, but it has like that mesh cover. So they can see you. You can barely see them. And they get wild. Now, I'm talking, this is a day game. I was pitching a day game there, warming up. And I was coming in from the bullpen. I remember warming up and, yeah, it's a 6-7th inning. So they're about 6 or 7 deep, right? The crew. And they just pile on, man. It was about the hyphenated name, like talking about how because I took my wife's name and I combined. I mean, they were going into detail. They were talking about the glasses, like all this stuff about the glasses, just wearing me out. And then on top of that, the whole Aussie thing. And then they were looking at, like, you know, just all kind. It was nuts, man. I'm sitting there just psychological, just battling my head. I'm like, will they hurry up and call me into the game? It was intense, man. They weren't messing around. There's 6 or 7, few beers on the Google, on the Wikipedia, wearing me out.
White Sox fans are a different breed.
They are different.
They are not your regular baseball fans.
And just
put it like that.
And just one word of advice. If you are warming up in that bullpen, don't glance down and make eye contact with the fence because you can't see anything, by the way. If you do that, you're done, man. You are done. So, that was a tough day for me. I'll never forget it.
That is some 4 wide. When we return, it is time for the timeline, including one of the best pieces of heckling sound I've ever heard. That's coming your way next. He's Ryan Roland-Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
It is time for the timeline. By the way, don't miss the debut of Bump and Stacy this coming Monday. Seattle Sports' new midday show airing weekdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station featuring Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross. He's Ryan Roland-Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers. This is The Timeline. This hour is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. And Ryan, in this segment, we look at some of the most viral stories, some of the quirky stories, the ones that capture your attention when you're scrolling your feeds. Let's start with this one. Coming off the heels of last night's NBA Finals championship won by the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry, who has won 4 championships and has accomplished pretty much everything there is to accomplish now in the game of basketball. He won the finals MVP last night for the first time 12 years ago, November 11, 2009. This was prior to them winning any NBA championship, winning any conference final, doing really anything in Golden State. He said this. He said, quote, "Promise to all the Warrior fans, we will figure this thing out. If it's the last thing we do, we will figure it out." Safe to say they figured things out.
For sure.
Have you ever seen a tweet age better than that one that Steph Curry sent in 2009, 4 championships later, 6 Western Conference Finals championships later? I mean, this is a dynasty.
Yeah.
And he promised it back in 2009, delivered. That's just one of the more amazing things you're going to see.
Yeah, it is. And usually tweets do not age well.
No.
Usually they just get forgotten or they age extremely bad. So when you look at this, this is 2009. Now, so Twitter had been around for what?
A couple of years.
Maybe a year or so. I'm trying to think when I first got on Twitter. I was one of the first baseball players to get on, and I got ripped from my teammates for being on there. But when you look at this, and this is back when social media wasn't as prevalent as it is now. So you look at this and you think, okay, it's not really calculated. I don't know if this was after a day. Maybe you can help me out with this. If this was after a day of some big news with Golden State, if there was something, you know, they had a front office change or they lost, or whatever it may be. But you look at this and just, you know, Steph Curry, when you read that, you think he's just trying to appease his following, which at that point is probably, you know, 150 people because not many people are on social media. And then you look at it now and it's just super, super, super cool to look at that thing and say, we'll figure this thing out. Now, to be honest, I don't think he sat there that night and said, I need to make this giant statement on Twitter. I think maybe, you know, personally, he's like, okay, I really want things to happen here. And I'm hopefully I'm with Golden State for a long time. And this is what I see happening. But when you look at that, man, it is super cool when all of a sudden it gets resurfaced years and years later and everyone reads that. And it's just, if you're a Golden State Warriors fan or if you're Matt Pittman, you absolutely love to see that.
Just gives
you, it gives you some good vibes.
So I had to look it up. That was sent November 11th, 2009. Okay. The Warriors lost that night by 14 points to the Indiana Pacers. Gotcha. Steph Curry came off the bench that night, only shooting 3 of 7 from the field. Didn't make a three, which hard to believe now that he went a game without making a three-pointer. But, yeah, I mean, just the journey that, that he has been on and to call his shot in that way, like Miguel Cabrera did off of Jamie Burke, just – That's why he's one of the greatest athletes in today's sporting world.
But he wasn't Steph Curry like we see now back then, right? I mean, you mentioned he played off the bench. I mean, he was basically
I believe that was his rookie season.
Okay,
too.
Okay. All right. So that as a rookie, I mean,
it's a lot of confidence, a lot of bravado.
That's what I'm saying, man. Social media has changed so much. A lot of this stuff now is way more calculated than it was 2009. So very cool to see that.
Also on the timeline, the most infamous fantasy football league in sports is the one where Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson and Mike Trout were all a part of. We found out that Alex Bregman of the Houston Astros was the winner of this fantasy football league. Well, Baseball Reference is now commemorating Alex Bregman's fantasy football championship with a little indicator on his page, fantasy football champion. Gotta love the folks at Baseball Reference for having some fun with it.
Absolute goal. And guess what, too? Now people are looking at Baseball Reference way more. So, hey, bold move for them. But what an insane rollout of events. First of all,
a story that could only happen in 2022.
100%. Now, we talk about, we're going back to that tweet in 2009 where now it's all of a sudden going viral with Steph Curry. If Tommy Pham had smacked Jock Peterson in the face back in 09, no way you would have seen it. Someone has said, oh, they got an altercation in the outfield, done with it. Now, all of a sudden, in 2022, someone, of course, has gotten that on video. And then you go back, and then all of a sudden you start seeing all the GIFs or GIFs, however you say it, go with it. And you start hearing more about the conversation. And now this, too. How are you getting that fantasy league? You
got to have a lot of money, I think, to pay the entrance fee to get into that league.
The worst part of this whole rollout of events from Tommy Pham too, and I've heard some very mixed reviews about Tommy Pham, put it that way.
Same.
He's addressed to the media. Now, we can't even play it. It's so bad. It's like, dude, you're not talking to your buddies. It was a head scratcher for sure. And then Jock Peterson trying to rebuttal with what
I feel like the only reason Tommy Pham got invited to that league, because if you've ever played fantasy football or fantasy baseball, it's about 10 to 12 people per league. And sometimes you're just looking for one last person to fill the final spot. And I bet one of Pham's teammates was like, hey, dude, we're looking for a 12th guy. Like, can you help us out here? And I bet he was like, yeah, how much is on the line? Yeah, I'll gladly join that league. And now whoever it was that needed the final guy in the league, they're probably just like, dude,
he's
what?
Never been
what
asked back
doing?
Again. He's been shunned from every text conversation. Yeah. By the way, you mentioned the fact that the text message thread that they're on a group chat with, I guarantee you there's side group chats talking about who brought this guy in for sure, 100%.
Also on the timeline, one of the best heckles. Now, Phil Mickelson, he gets it a lot these days, especially because he's chosen to now chase the $200 million guarantee that the LIV Tour is paying him. We know that his gambling debts have reached to about $40 million at one point. This show has made it well known that Phil Mickelson will be a punching bag in ways that no other golfer is these days. Well, he's not only hearing it from us, but he's hearing it on the course. This was yesterday during the first round of the U.S. Open. A heckler wanted some betting advice from Phil.
There's been a lot of...
Phil, Al Horford, over 9.5 rebounds.
Phil, Al Horford, over 9.5 rebounds.
Now, what he should have done is just basically turn around and give it. You know how he sometimes, I don't know if he's still doing this, but I remember back in the day when I was watching, when he was in the peak, he'd give his like little thumbs up. Like the crowd would applaud a good shot. I remember seeing this in person at the Phoenix Open when Waste Management was sponsoring it. I don't know if they're still sponsoring it or not. But he'd give this awkward like thumbs up. You know what I'm saying? Like he'd make a shot and give it an awkward thumbs up. What he should have done, if he wants to win some people back here, because everyone's given it to him, he should have just turned around and given like a thumbs up or a thumbs down or something, just to acknowledge it. And the guy would be like, yeah, sweet, thanks.
Yeah, boy. Phil actually ended up missing the cut. That news just came down. It finished at minus 11, or plus 11, not minus 11, boy. Plus 11 today at the U.S. Open, so not a good weekend for him, or he didn't even make it to the weekend. Let's look at the IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Jerry DePoto did not give timelines on when we'll see Kyle Lewis or Mitch Haniger back in the lineup. He did say that Mitch Haniger is moving closer and closer to the finish line, and Kyle Lewis is taking it day by day. If you had to guess, Ryan, between those two, who do you think we see first? I think Kyle Lewis.
I hope so. It's just still a gray area. What's going on after that concussion? Like, is there something else going on that we're not quite sure about? Because it seems a little strange. And again, I'm not messing with concussions at all, especially.
Fickle.
It's
hard
weird,
to predict.
I remember Justin Morneau with the Twins just never recovered. So I say this lightly, but when I think about with Kyle Lewis, it's so hard to figure out. But you would assume you would see Kyle Lewis first and then Mitch Haniger, hopefully 100% fully recovered before he gets on that ankle.
Coming up next, who are the all-star locks on this Mariners roster? Who still has a case to be made? We talk that next. He's Ryan Roland Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Make sure you're downloading the podcast at seattlesports.com, wherever it is you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. Rate, review, and subscribe. 5 stars only. He's Ryan Roland Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers. Coming up in 15 minutes, who are the biggest game changers today in sports? A lot of people to pick from. A lot of really just jaw-dropping performances we see time and time again. Who are the biggest game changers? There's a couple names that come to mind. Maybe even somebody that is playing against the Mariners right now. We'll talk about that in less than 15 minutes. But right now, the Mariners are... It's weird, Ryan, where the Mariners have a lot of guys that are performing well.
Yeah.
Ty France, Julio Rodriguez, J.P. Crawford, Logan Gilbert. I mean, there are Eugenio Suarez. And if someone had told you at the beginning of the year that you'd be seeing career years or bounce back years from all those guys, you'd probably think... All right, things are going well. Things are going really well. And even Jerry DePoto mentioned it, I think he was either last week or the week before, like you hardly ever see teams that have like 4 to 5 guys whose WAR is on pace for above 4, and that team missed the playoffs. But that's kind of where we're at right now, where if things don't start breaking the Mariners' way, it could, you know, snowball here. But with that being said, this team still has a lot of talent on the roster.
Yeah, it's, you know, and we talked about 2010 earlier. You talked about Russell Brennan coming back, and I tiptoe around 2010 for a lot of different reasons. And someone on the text line talked about, you know, this is very similar to 2010, and it is not for, and that's one of the big reasons why. When you look down, up and down this list, you mentioned J.P. Crawford, Ty France. First of all, two guys who are just so much fun to watch, having big years. There wasn't that when you go back to a year like 2010. Julio Rodriguez, you've got someone who is going to be one of the biggest superstars in the game. You get to watch him every single day. You did not have that in 2010. You've got Logan Gilbert and George Kirby. We talked to Shannon Dreyer about these two guys. You did not have that youth and output. So that's really the difference. And that's why when you look at, you know, the record, you sort of, it's a bit of a head scratcher. And we've talked about coming up in big situations. I just think when the more you look at that, and you even bringing that up, as some of these guys from a pitching standpoint and from the lineup, everything else, it's just missing that one big key ingredient. And that is some threat in the middle of the lineup. Robbie Ray, he's pitching tonight. He is so close. To having that little weapon to get out of that one at-bat or that one situation to keep him rolling on that second half of the game. So there is so much good stuff happening right now, but, man, they just have to put the pieces together.
Yeah, and you mentioned Robbie Ray had an incredible start his last time out against Boston, going 7 shutout innings, only allowing the 3 hits. We're seeing him use that sinker a bit more. He used it to a certain degree against the Astros, but then he really relied upon it against Boston. We'll be watching for that tonight, obviously. But you look at this Mariners roster right now, Ryan, and there are the obvious suspects, Ty France, J.P. Crawford, Logan Gilbert, Julio Rodriguez. I mean, I think of those four, that is who has the best those are the four guys that have the best shot of being named an All-Star. And I think Ty France, of those four, is probably the biggest lock, and especially because production at first base in the American League just is not there as it is as it normally is.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned the production. And now, first of all, I'll say this, and I'll spend 2 seconds on it. You mentioned the production. It's interesting, man. Like, usually the first base, you know, sector of when you're looking at the votes, like, man, you better hit some serious, have some serious power. But with that being said, regardless, if he doesn't go to that All-Star game, outside of one member of each team or whatever, you know, then all of a sudden I'm going to start criticizing how much scoop the Mariners get on a national level outside of our region here. It is insane. It would be nuts if he didn't go. Speaking of that, too, with some of these other guys you mentioned, when you go down the list, you mentioned Eugenio Suarez, which is an interesting one. Obviously, we saw Rafael Devers at third base, just 329, 16 home runs. But his name is right there in the thick of it. When you're looking at, you know, across the board, average home runs, he's third. RBIs, he's third. OPS, he's third. He's right there. You've got Jose Ramirez. You've got Rafael Devers, Eugenio Suarez. So he is kind of on the outside looking in. But I say this again, being in Seattle affects
we him. See it every day.
We see it, yeah, exactly.
But the people who are controlling a lot of the media coverage of Major League Baseball, the classic East Coast bias, as I like to say,
which is
on
real
this
thing.
Show. Yeah, it absolutely thing. Is. They're not staying up late to watch the Mariners.
Not staying up. We start at 10 o'clock at night. You know, summer rolls around. No one's sitting up 10 o'clock to check in on what's happening on the West Coast.
These games go until 1, 2 in the morning East Coast time?
Yeah, unless you live in L.A., which has a huge, huge market, huge population, and obviously some success as well. So that's going to be against, you know, guys who do come over and play on the West Coast for sure. But obviously Ty France, man. I mean, absolute lock. He's going to make his first All-Star team. Go back to that trade as well. I go back to this all the time. All right, Torrens has not been the same lately. He's showing flashes of it. Andrés Muñoz, let's not forget, he's barely got 50 innings of career innings in the big leagues.
Well, and the Mariners thought enough of him to give him that contract extension during the offseason.
Yeah, and then you got Ty France, and now Taylor Trammell starting to hit. And who'd you give up again? You know what I mean? Like,
gave up Austin Nola, Austin Adams, and Dan Altavilla.
Yeah, thanks. I mean,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that trade is a smashing success, even if Ty France is the only one of those guys that blossom. Well, I think he already is a tremendous player, leading the team in WAR. He's got a .317 batting average, nearly a .400 on base percentage this season. I think you look at him and that trade, obviously it's paying off. Another move that's paying off that I was critical of this offseason is where they didn't go out and add from that great crop of shortstops that were available. Now, you look at the results of a lot of those guys. You know, Trevor Story, he took it to the Mariners when they played them in Boston in the month of May. But thank goodness they did not sign Javi Baez, who has been one of the worst hitters in baseball. You know, shelling out $300 million to Corey Seager, that's a huge investment that Texas – right now, I mean, it'd be great to have him on your roster for sure. But J.P. Crawford, he is on a team-friendly deal, and also he has contributed above where he was even a year ago last year, when I think we all kind of point to last year as a breakout season for him.
Yeah, I think with J.P. Crawford, when they extended him, you know, what was that, right around opening day, they basically came out and said, yeah, we're extending J.P. Crawford. I loved it for a couple of reasons. Number one, J.P. Crawford strikes me as the kind of guy that if he has some job security, let's not forget, he was a big prospect with the Phillies and some considered him to be a bust, and he came over to the Seattle Mariners, and Perry Hill was instrumental in changing his, you know, his approach and his psychological view on the game and where he's at in his career, and kind of readjusted him, recalibrated him. They spent some time in Arizona before that first year here in the Mariners uniform. And even Perry talked about with JP, he was had his guard up, and he was just kind of like, no, this is how I do things. And Perry's like, no, 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 this is how we're going to do things. This is how it's going to go down, because he was honest with him. Your career ain't going the way it's supposed to. All of a sudden, he figures things out. He's a completely different guy. You can hear him talking post-game, talking to us, talking, and you can see him, the energy he's on the field. So when you have a chance that he's going to nod his head and say yes to cementing his job security, look at the output now. Now he can sit back, and you don't get – it's not a situation where you get comfortable. I don't think he can do that with some of the people around him, the coaching staff. But he's the kind of guy that is a huge, huge foundation for him to go out and just play. Just go out and play. When they did that, man, I loved that move because, again, like I said, it didn't have to cost you a whole lot. He didn't have to go out and try and press in situations. He knew he was going to be a Seattle Mariner. He could take on that leadership role. So I love that. Great, absolute great move. Especially, too, I talk about this all the time. Real quick, that lockout affected teams like the Mariners recruiting, signing free agents. It made it way tougher to get some of these guys when everyone was in that big rush right before spring training.
Coming up next, who are the biggest game changers today in sports? We want to hear from you on the Mac and Jacks text line, 206-421-3776. Text us who you think are some of the biggest game changers in sports. We talk that next. He's Ryan Roland-Smith. I'm Curtis Rogers filling in today. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.